Well, so to recall from yesterday, we looked at the Gaussian model, which were the first term here, and then we used renormalization group procedure in order to find the fixed point for it, and then we looked at some critical exponents. And we know that that gives the same critical exponents in general to of the sort of thing that we get for mean field theory. So today we're going to go ahead and include another order from that expanding out of the log of Cauch using these u and r and h parameters. And we will look at renormalization group for this theory. Okay, so let's first rewrite the partition function in terms of basically a quadratic part, or sometimes I just call it a free part, versus the interaction piece. Because this is the interaction piece, which is going to include both slow modes and fast modes. So when we split it up into phi plus and phi minus, this is going to mix the phi pluses and phi minuses. So let's rewrite z as we're going to have the integral up to the cutoff, and then we're going to have e to the minus s naught phi minus e minus s interaction of phi, where this is s interaction, this is s naught. And then we're also going to just include this part we will set h equal to 0 because we don't need it to compute eta and nu. And we're going to be focusing on these two critical exponents. So, like I said, when we split it up, what we know from yesterday, we'll get a phi plus and a phi minus, and these terms separate. So this Gaussian part will factorize into a plus and a minus, but the interaction does not. And what we want to do is we want to rewrite it as, some integral up to some cutoff of the slow modes only of e to some s prime of the slow modes. So that's what we want to get. And so to do that, we are going to look at basically, we're going to factor out, so this part, s naught, can be written as s naught minus plus s naught plus. And we really want to focus on how we get this thing that then can be integrated at the end over phi minus. So we can just pull out this e to the s naught phi minus, and that doesn't have to be included in the integral for now, because we're just going to focus on what this is equal to. But then we've still got s dot plus, and then we've got this s interaction with which mixes both the plus and the minus. So we are going to focus on e to the minus s naught phi minus. And then we still have the integrand, but only over the fast modes. And then we have e to the minus s naught phi plus, and then e to the minus s interaction phi minus plus s plus phi plus in that exponent. And so then the hope is that we can turn all of this stuff into just an e to the minus s prime phi minus that we can then integrate over phi minus. Okay, so this thing, we're going to rewrite it in a couple of ways to allow us to compute it. And in fact, I'll actually jump to, we can say that this is proportional. It's going to have an extra denominator that we're going to add that I'll explain in a moment. But I'm going to keep this phi minus piece out here. And then this piece, we'll keep it the same as before. But then we're going to divide through and create this sort of normalization, which is e to the minus, and with another s naught. And when we do this, it's not going to matter ultimately because we're going to compute correlation functions. So we'll end up dividing by common factors, and it will allow us to get the answers that we like. But just when looking at this, what does this type of thing look like?
Expectation value?
Yes, it's an expectation value. What's the probability distribution we're using, or, you know, weight distribution?
Free.
Yes, this free part. So this is like saying we have an average with e to the minus s naught of phi plus as our probability distribution. So then we can go ahead and write this as, that should be, I have a minus there, e to the minus s naught phi minus, and then just use this notation for averages, and then we have e to the minus si phi minus plus phi plus, and then I'm taking average, and I'm using this plus sign to signify it's going to be an average over the free theory for the plus modes. And so this allows us to use the cumulant expansion. So the idea is, you know, if this thing is going to be equal to this thing, then what we're interested in really is the negative log, right? We're going to say that s prime of phi minus is going to be approximately equal to the negative log of this e to the minus s naught phi minus times this average e to the minus si phi minus plus phi plus plus. And so what we are going to do then is expand the log of these things. So you can use that the log of 1 plus x is approximately x minus x squared over 2. And then you can also take e to the minus si phi minus plus phi plus, and that's going to be approximately 1 minus si plus si squared over 2. And we're going to be taking these things to second order, so that's why I've included both of these things. And so then, well, the log of this first piece is just s naught. What I'm interested really in is the log of this second piece, because we're going to add them together. So we can say that the log of 1, and now I'm just going to put this piece in for the exponent, 1 minus si plus si squared over 2. That is going to be approximately, and then I want to use this expression right here. And so I have a 1, so that part matches. And then I have this x. And so this x, well, to first order, it's just going to be this piece here. So I'm going to have minus si plus si squared over 2. And then what am I going to need from the second order piece here? Make sure that this stuff doesn't encroach on the stuff below it too. Because this piece just came from that first term. I said, you know, this is my x here. And then I have this squared piece. And so, you know, it's going to be this plus this, but they're averages, and then they're going to be squared, so they're times another average that's separate. And I'll get some cubes, and I'll get some to the 4, but I don't care about those. What I care about is this SI quantity squared. So I'm going to get plus SI average squared over 2. Oh, and it's a minus, according to the expansion. And so this is what I'm going to get to second order when I do this. So then we can say ln of e to the minus si plus is equal to minus si average. That's that first piece. And then both of these have a factor of 2, so I can say plus 1/2, and now we get a variance, basically. I get si squared minus si average, then the average squared. And so this is what I'm going to be using for. And all of these are going to be using this plus distribution. Any questions on this so far? And so to remind ourselves, the SI terms, all of these SIs come with four phi fields. So we'll get terms like, you know, phi k1, phi k2, phi k3, phi k4, you know, averaged in this plus probability distribution. And so that's going to allow us to use, you know, when you've got all these correlation functions with high orders and whatnot, what are you going to use for that kind of thing? How do you actually compute those? You're like pairing them up, right? That's what you want to do. So you know, it's Wick's theorem, right? So we're going to be doing stuff like phi k1, phi k2 together with phi k3, phi k4 together. And I'm not going to write out the full thing. I will assume you have some knowledge about this. But, you know, so in 1, 3, and 2, 4, and so on in these various combinations. And so we're going to be using results from Wick's theorem when we are thinking through the terms in this expansion. And so we are going to also be developing our own Feynman-like rules, but just for this Euclidean type of theory. And so before I write out the rules in general, let's just sort of think about what quantities we're dealing with. So I'm just going to write out the interaction piece again. And when we think about this, we are going to have fast modes and slow modes in here. In fact, we'll have all possible combinations, you know? We'll have something like 2 plus, 2 minus, or maybe we have a plus, a minus, a plus, a minus, or maybe we'll have plus and then 3 minuses. And the point is, because to remind us that in general, phi k1 is equal to phi k1 plus phi k1 minus. This is just an expansion of all those and of all combinations of those. And so you probably remember from Feynman diagrams, these delta or Kronecker deltas in this case, since we're in the lattice formulation, but these Kronecker deltas are like the vertices. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to use solid lines to indicate phi minus fields. And so this would be an example where we have like four phi minus fields. And then this vertex controls that all the momenta need to follow this relation. And then I'll use dashed lines for the phi plus fields. And for both of these, you know, there's only one way they could all be plus, and there's only one way they could all be minus. So I'm just going to use, you know, so there's just one of this one in the sum, and there's one of this one in the sum. So we can represent this sum, you know, schematically in this way. So what are the other things that we can get?
One dashed and three full lines.
Yes. So we can also get one dashed line and then three solid lines. And so this dashed line is a plus But any of these could be the plus. So how many of these are we going to get? Yeah, four. So we're going to have four diagrams that look like this. What else?
2, 2, right?
Yeah, we've got two, two. So we have two dashed lines, two solid lines. But you know, I could have these two, or these two, or these two. Or these. So how many combinations are there if you choose two out of four things? Six, yes. Six of these. And then the only one left, I think, is the one solid and three dashed. Okay. And so this is really going to be our starting point because this is one of these phi to the four terms. And then we're going to combine them and see how we can contract them in different ways. So let me go ahead and give the rules here more formally, which I guess are just rules, not Feynman rules, since they aren't officially the Feynman ones. Same idea. Each solid external leg carries a phi plus x, sorry, phi minus k. Each dashed external leg carries a phi plus. Each vertex involves a u over 4 factorial b cubed times that Kronecker delta of all the k's. And then that's the stuff that made sense for what I drew here. But ultimately, if we look at what we're planning on doing with the cumulant expansion, we're going to be taking these operators, because this is really just to represent, well, not operators, we're going to be taking these fields, because this is represented of products of fields. And then we're going to be taking expectation values of them. And so that's where we really need to use Wick's theorem, and we're going to have various integrals over pairs of fields that look like this. So that's important. So we're going to then connect lines to get each other. Those are going to be two fields and an expectation value. So each internal line carries an expectation value of phi plus k phi, sorry, we have phi plus k phi plus q with the plus distribution. Because remember, the whole point of this, when we look at it up there, is we're going to sum over the plus modes and leave the minus modes behind. So the only things that are going to be summed up and connected are going to be these dashed lines. These are the internal lines. And this can be computed. And it's just, I'll write down what it is so we have it to refer to. Phi k plus phi q plus with the plus distribution is equal to v times the delta of k plus q. So one momentum needs to be the negative of the other momentum divided by r plus k squared. And then this one is, and it's zero otherwise. Okay, and this is if these things are fast modes. And this thing, by the way, is fairly straightforward to compute because remember this plus distribution is just the Gaussian, the original Gaussian. So that means if you want to do this, remember you have that Q is equal to minus K. So you'll be getting things that look like K plus squared, but then you have the e to the minus, and then it's the Gaussian, so it's like some, what was it, r plus k squared times phi k plus squared. And so you can use like the Feynman integral trick where you take the derivative under the integral and you can compute it and you can get this value. Okay. Which I know he didn't invent it, but he decided to associate himself with it, and he's in physics, and these things end up being very useful to physics, as we know. So that's what it is in my head. Okay, so now we want to start computing these things. Okay, so using these rules, that means that when we're thinking about these operators here, the first thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at just the average of Si. Because that was part of what we had in the sum here. Well, in the case of this average, this piece, none of these pieces have any dependency on the plus, right? Because these are all phi minuses. So this is just, is still going to be this diagram. We still have all the phi minuses. We're not including the integral of phi minus because that's going to be out here when we're defining our S prime. And then the pieces where we had three of one thing and only one of the other thing, these are all just going to be equal to zero. Because what's going to happen is we're going to have an average of phi plus by itself. And you can see if you look at it, I think it's probably easiest to look at it in position space. And anyway, you have a product of an odd function and even function. So you're going to get zero for any piece that has an odd number of these dashed lines. Okay, so what about a term like this? We are going to do all the summations over the plus. So what's going to happen to a term that looks like this? Because this is basically saying we're going to have, you know, a phi minus, a phi minus, a phi plus, and a phi plus, but then we're going to average with respect to the plus variables. And these dashed lines are the plus variables. So when we integrate them over, the Wick's theorem is easier in this case. It's just this matrix function of two pluses. So what's going to happen here is we still have these external lines representing the phi minuses, but then the two pluses are going to be become an internal line here. And they're just this average that I mentioned up here. And you know then that one is going to be plus k, one is going to be minus k. In fact, you know, if you're thinking about arrows, you could say this is k, you know, this goes the other way, it's minus k when it comes back into the vertex when you're thinking about momenta, which we'll think about that in a bit, but not quite yet. Right now we're just going to count all of the diagrams. Okay, and then the last piece is only dashed lines. And we only have one of these. But what's going to happen to this one? We've got these four dashed lines. And we know that they all need to be summed over because we're integrating over all of the phi plus variables. So how do we represent that integration? We'll look at this figure. Do you want to say something?
Well, it's going to be like a...
Yeah, we're just going to get like two loops. So we have this, we're going to have two of them are going to join, two of them are going to join. But that's important because there are a variety of ways that you can get two and two, right? And this is our four choose... Well, it's not four choose two again, because here the order doesn't matter. But you can have, you know, you can have one, two, with three, four. You have 1, 3 with 2, 4, or you can have 1, 4 with 2, 3. See, there's three ways you can do it. And so you're gonna have an extra coefficient of 3 out front for this one. And so this one, of course, is gonna maintain its 6. I should have kept that there because there were already 6 ways of this. But for each one of these 6, there's only one way to combine the dashed loops. So the 6 stays as 6. This one gains a factor of 3 when we think about all the ways that we can contract those using Wick's theorem. Okay, so that tells us that Si plus can just be represented as this one plus 6 times this diagram plus 3 times that diagram. And let me just box it so that I remember where to find it. Okay. So what about Si squared minus the average of Si plus squared? Well, first of all, we can think about, that's not helpful for this one, but for this one, we're going to think about what the operator Si squared would look like. So for that one, we have basically this plus 4 times this one plus 6 times this one plus 4 times this one plus the dashed one by itself squared. So we're going to get all kinds of things, you know. We're going to get two of these, and then we're going to get eight of these guys because of cross terms. And then we would get like 12 of these with two. And then, and then this one, and so on. Of course, I'm not going to actually write out all of the things here. But, and this is something that you can think through yourself. What's going to happen is when we have this thing, and then we subtract out the average squared, the result is we will remove all disconnected diagrams with this term. Because if you think about this term as it is, well, this term is just going to be this piece, which we already calculated, this average squared. So you know actually all the terms in this term squared would be disconnected. What I haven't proven is that they are exactly all of the disconnected terms when you do the average of SI squared. But you can check this, and that will be the case. So then we get SI squared plus minus SI plus squared is only the connected diagrams for, well, I'll just write it as for this SI squared and then take the average. So that's what we're going to be thinking about. Okay, and so we have basically the things we can work with up here, and we want to think about the ways that we could combine them. Well, first of all, this really can't connect with anything, because notice if we need to connect, we need dashed lines to connect diagrams with other diagrams. So this would always just be two of these by itself, disconnected. We could do something with this piece, in fact, so I'll go ahead and start there. So this came from, you know, one of these plus another one of these. And then we know that the coefficient of each of these, there are four of each of these. And so the number of diagrams of this type is going to be 16. Okay. As another example, let's take this one and let's just connect it with another one of these. So we can have something that looks like this, you know, and this one just came from two of these. And we know that for these, there are six of each of them. So we have six times six. But then there's one additional thing in the counting here, because when we do the integration over these dashed lines, we could connect, you know, if we think of one, two, three, and four, we could connect one with three, or we could connect one with four. So we get an extra factor of two there. So that means that there are 72 of these types of diagrams. Okay, so if I'm connecting a diagram that looks like this, well, what are the factors that I'm going to get, you know, first, if I think about that come from each of these diagram types? Yeah, so I get 4 times 4 for these, but then this one I have to think about all the ways that I could combine these dashed lines, because I could have 1 with 2, 1 with 3, 1 with yeah, 1 with 2, 1 with 3, or I have 2 with 3. So that looks like 3, but I think I'm missing something.
P squared, right?
I think it's because there's two of these. So I could have this one belongs with 1, 2. Yeah, so there's an additional factor of 2 coming from the fact that these are two different diagrams. So I could pick this to be my fields 1, 2, 3, or 4, or I could pick this one to come from my fields 1, 2, 3, and 4, because I'm building this from 8 fields total, 1 through 8, right? So yeah, this one, since there are two different types of diagrams, I get an extra factor of 2. And yeah, you could stare at these a long time. It takes a while to think through them sometimes. These, we didn't have that extra factor too, because it was the same diagrams for both of them. Okay, and then we can have something that looks like this, where this comes from two identical diagrams again. This comes from two of these, and there are 4 of each of them. So we have 4 times 4, but then there you have to count how many ways that you can move these around, and turns out there are 6 ways that come from choosing these. You know, now you have 3 numbers and you're lining them up in order. So then that's going to give us 96 of these. This one is also formed from the same two diagrams, but contracted in a different way. So again, we're going to get 4 times 4. But then on each of these sides, just like this side had that factor of 3 that came from how we could arrange these two lines, each of these sides gets a factor of 3. So we have 144 of these. We have something like this, and this one, well, we know that there are 6 of these, and then we had something like, yeah, I don't even remember how I counted this one. but the point is, you have to think through each of these and all the ways you can combine 1, 2, 3, 4 with 5, 6, 7, 8. And if you get confused, you can always resort to lists of numbers, which is what I do in the end if I'm very confused about something. We have this one that came from two of these dashed lines, so then everything is simply integrated over. Oh, I know why this one is six. So if you look at it naively, you might think it's three because there are three ways to make two loops, but then the order matters because it matters which side you connect. So you get an extra factor two there. That's where the six came from. Okay, and then finally, another way to combine four of these is just, well, this is just going to be 4 factorial. So we're going to have 24 of these. This is probably a good place to take a break before we finish this out. So as you can see, well, this is all the diagrams that we would get from this average, this subtraction of averages. But this is also quite a few diagrams. And so now we're going to justify ignoring some of them, some with more justification than others. But let's think about some of the very straightforward reasons why some diagrams don't matter. So just to remind you, the dashed line is for k, which I'm just going to call k plus, where this stuff is greater than the cutoff. And then the solid line is for a momenta that is less than the cutoff. So some of these diagrams are actually automatically going to be zero, because if we have the case of this diagram, and let's just focus on this vertex, it involves two vertices. I'll use k minus there, with basically where you've got something like, let's call this one k1. We can call this one k2 plus. So k minus 1, k2 plus. We can call this one k3 plus, and then call this one minus k3 plus. Because on one side you're going to get plus, and the other side you're going to get minus for these contractions. So we're going to get something like k1 minus. Let's just say, let's just assume it's going in, or we'll subtract. K1 minus plus K2 plus K3 plus minus K3 plus. So that is zero. But this whole thing needs to be zero. So we get a situation where we need K1 minus K2 plus to equal zero. And that's never going to happen because these are already defined to be in separate modes. So then that means that anything that includes a vertex that looks like this, with which is really just two of these diagrams, we would say that this is equal to this diagram, which is equal to zero, because it's impossible to satisfy that condition at the vertex. We will also drop diagrams with no external legs, these have no phi minus dependence. And so remember, these are going to be exponentiated. So you'll get diagrams that look like this in the numerator and the denominator. And so since they have no phi minus, they're not going to affect what we have. So we don't need to worry about this one. And then we don't need to worry about that one, which is hard to draw anyway. Okay, and then diagrams with six external legs introduce phi to the six terms, which we don't really have a justification to drop them at this stage. It turns out if you did this and then you included these terms, you would find that it didn't change the result. So in the interest of time and notes, I'm not going to include these. So we aren't going to have this. We aren't going to have, yeah. And we're also going to exclude terms that have more loops. So we're also going to exclude this one. This one. And so really all we're going to do is approximate then this plus minus this SI squared plus minus SI plus squared as just, in fact, we need a 1/2 in front if we're going to use our cumulant expansion formula. So we're just going to have that as 36 times this diagram. And so this is the one that we'll be computing. Okay, right, and then I want the negative log at the end. Okay, so that's why there's a minus. Okay, so then let me go ahead and write out my equation. I'm going to say that S prime of minus is going to be approximately equal to this term plus six times this term. And then I'm going to ignore that 3-1 because it's internal lines. And then I'm going to have minus 36 times this. And this just comes from the fact that we want to take the negative log in order to get the S prime. So I'm doing negative of those things up there. Okay. So, computing the diagrams. We have that this first one, it's not really a computation. It's just reminding ourselves what it is, because this is just the minus portion of the phi to the 4 term, and we didn't do any integrating over it at all. But I'm writing it down because something that's so trivial, you're like, well, what was that again? Especially since we've been living in the diagram land for so long. Okay, and now we need to compute this one. 6 times this diagram with one loop. And again, this just came from 4 of these, right? Because you see it formed from 2 phi minuses and 2 phi pluses that are integrated over. And so we can write that one as sum over k1, k2. Then we have phi k1 minus phi k2 minus. Those are the 2 external legs. Let me go ahead and write down the 6. And then for this one, we're going to get a plus k minus k in here. So for the delta function, this part doesn't matter. So we're just going to get, or sorry, the Kronecker delta. We're going to get delta k1 plus k2 must be equal to 0. And then we're going to have our u over 4 factorial v cubed that came with that piece. And then finally, this is our integrated part. So we can use our formula right here for the integrated part. And so then that is a sum over q times v over r plus q squared. And so just to note, hey, that just came from phi plus k, phi plus q. And it forced them to be the same as each other. And then we integrated over them. And so then I'm just going to rearrange it because it will make it easier later. I'm going to write it as 1 over 2v, because we've got a few v's in here. Right, we've got 3 of them. Okay, I might be off by a v, I'm not sure. Okay, phi k minus squared u over 2. And so we have a 6, we have the 4 factorial, that will get rid of 2 times 3 in there, we'll be left with a 4 that I've split into 2 2s here. And then I have 1 over v times the sum. Oh, right, and there was another v up here. Okay, so I have v over v cubed, which gives me v squared. I'm going to put a v here and a v there. So then we have q mu is greater than this piece, 1 over r plus q squared. And then I'm going to separate out this piece and call it I1b for integral, because we're going to approximate I1b using an integral, which is going to be, well, it's going to be over all of the momenta of the q, and I'm going to keep it in terms of a general dimension. So if we integrate it over that, the angular piece becomes a predictable value, and that's what I'm calling SD1. This is just the solid angle effectively, but for however many dimensions. And then I'm going to have this integral over the momenta. So from cutoff over B to cutoff, Q to the D minus 1 DQ over R plus q squared. So that just came from turning this sum, first of all, into an integral. And then we would have had a dn q, but then I go ahead and integrate over the angle stuff. I get this solid angle, which you can find a formula for in however many dimensions. And then we're left with q to the d minus 1 dq. OK, what do I want to keep? I guess I want to keep that up there. Okay, and then finally, we need to look at this diagram. So for this one, and there were 36 of them, we are going to have 36, and now there are 4 external phi minus momenta. So I have k1, k2, k3, k4, phi minus k1. Phi minus K2, phi minus K3, phi minus K4. And then I'm going to have 2 vertices here. So I'm going to get 2 of these Kronecker deltas, K1 plus K2 minus Q1 plus Q2, where the Qs are going to be that internal momenta that needs to be equal to 0, and then another delta, Kronecker delta, of K3 plus K4 plus Q1 minus Q2 that needs to be equal to 0. And then finally, I have this vertex piece u squared, because there's 2 of them. And so then I have 2 factors of 4 factorial. And then I have v cubed times v cubed, or v to the 6. And then my summation over the internal momenta looks like q1, q2. And then I'm going to have v over r plus q1, v over r plus q2. And this last piece is going to turn into another integral that I'm just going to call integral 2. We are going to simplify this a little bit. One thing to notice, if you have k1 plus k2 minus q1 plus q2 equals 0, and k3 plus k4 plus q1 minus q2 equals 0. You can add these and just get that the sum over all the k's is equal to 0. And so then the other simplification that's going to be done is that these q's are equal to each other. That's not really true. And they will mix with the k's, so you'll get some k's in here too because of how these are related. But these end up being higher order terms that aren't relevant to the answer. So we're just going to rewrite this as u over 16b cubed. Okay, 16, because I took 4 times 4, and the 6s went away because I have a 36 here. And then I took one of my v cubes. I have a v squared here, so I should have one v left over there. So I have k1, k2, k3, k4. Phi minus k1, phi minus k2, phi minus k3, phi minus k4. Our Kronecker delta with the sum over the momentum. And then I'm going to call, I'm going to write integral 2 of b, where integral 2 of b is approximately in the same spirit as the earlier one. We're going to get the solid angle for d minus 1, 2 pi over d, integral from the 1, the phi, lambda over b to lambda dq, q to the d minus 1. And then this time we're going to get r plus q squared, but then that is going to be squared because now we have two of these. Okay, so now we've written out what our diagrams actually would look like mathematically. And so the whole point of this was to then write what S prime was and compare it to our original S. And when we do that, we also need to do the other step of the renormalization procedure, which was to scale our parameters. And how did we rescale these parameters? Remember from yesterday? So n prime should be equal to what?
Over b raised to d?
Yes. It's going to be fewer points because now we've made this unit bigger. So we divide by the new unit to get the number of points that we have. And so that's also the case that v prime is equal to v over b to the d. And then we also have k prime. What do we do with k prime? Remember, we want to bring it back up to the cutoff. So do you remember what we did with the original k, which was like the slow modes k?
Times b.
Yeah. So k prime is equal to k times b. And then we have that phi prime k is equal to z times phi k. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take this formula that I had up here. Where is it? Okay, S prime phi minus, which I'm not sure if I, did I ever write it out exactly? So yeah, that. So it's this thing, right? But then I think I'm missing a part of that because I'm missing the part that came from the exponential originally. So let me fix this formula and then we can put everything in the formula.
Thank you.
it is going to be these three diagrams, which came from the cumulant expansion. But we also need to add S naught of phi minus. And that came from up here, right, where I said S prime is equal to the log of S naught phi minus times the average. Okay, so that first part is just going to be S naught. So I need to make sure I add this in addition to the diagrams from the cumulant expansion. Okay, so when I do that, S prime of phi minus is going to be approximately equal to, so we had 1 over 2v, that's going to turn into v prime over b to the minus d. And then I'm going to have my sum over k such that k mu, this is the rescaled k, so I can just do the sum over k prime now. Sum over k prime. And then I'm going to have r plus b to the minus 2k. This part just came from my S naught. So that part I didn't calculate. That didn't come from the Feynman diagrams. But then I have another term that involves a phi k squared, because I'm looking at the phi k squared's terms right now. And that is going to have a u over 2 and then an i1b over. Yeah, so plus u over 2 i1b. And this is multiplied by the rescaled field. Right, so now I've combined this piece from the cumulant expansion over. Okay, now what about the phi 4 terms? Which pieces here will contribute to the phi 4 terms?
The first and the third.
Exactly. Because both the first and the third have four external legs, and the external legs are phi minus terms. So both of those are going to contribute to phi four terms. So I'm going to have plus. Now before I had the four factorial, and then I had v cubed. I'm going to write it as v prime cubed, so I'm going to get b to the minus 3d when I rescale it. I'm going to sum over k prime. Okay, and now I have two contributions here. One of them is the simple one, right? It's just this term up here, and so it carries a u. So that one came from this thing. Maybe I'll just remind you where each of these came from. This came from this thing. Okay, and then I have one last term that I rewrote over here. And I want to actually put this over 24, right? Because there's a 4 factorial here. So I could write that as 3 halves times, 2 thirds times 24 gives me 16. So 3 halves is what I want there. Okay, so then I have minus 3 halves because I have a minus sign there. U squared i2b. Yeah, minus 3 halves, okay. And then this part just came from this diagram. Then I have z to the minus 4 phi k1 prime phi k2 prime, phi k3 prime, phi k4 prime, and then we have our Kronecker delta as before. So as you can see, we very purposefully grouped these in a way so that we have something that looks like what we started out with at the top. In fact, let me just put that one in the middle now so we can compare them with each other. Before we had r plus k, now we have r plus b to the minus 2k prime plus u over 2 i1b. Before we had just a u, but now we have a u minus 3 halves u squared i2b. So that means we can actually now define our renormalization group transformation for the phi 4 theory. And that's saying every time we change scales, you know, every time we scale it by b, we will get a new r prime, which is equal to, we have b to the minus d. Oh, we didn't determine the dimension of this. Okay, we want the dimension of k prime to go away. So z should be, we should get b to the minus d times z to the minus 2 should equal b squared. Or in other words, z should be equal to b to the 2 minus d, and then over 2. Or b to the, no, b to the minus 2 plus d. Okay, so if I put z over here, I have z squared, b to the minus d minus 2, and then I'm going to take the square root of both of them, and that should be it. Okay. So then if I'm looking at r prime, I have b to the d, but then I have z to the minus 2. D should go away, and so I should get b squared, and then I have r plus ui1b over 2. So that's saying if I have some r and I change my scale, I scale it by b, this is what the new r is going to be. And so notice now, you know, it's much more complicated than when we had the Gaussian model. And the Gaussian model just scaled by b squared. With phi 4 theory, it's going to scale in this complicated way. And then u prime is going to scale once I put in this value for z and multiply through. I'm going to get b to the 4 minus d times u minus 3 halves u squared i2b. And so this is really important. This is what the main point to get to today. We're going to go a little further to compare to what Francois showed you, but this is the main point to get to this RGT and see how these things scale. Okay, so something that that several of you were wondering about, and that we can certainly find out in this case, is we have some relationship that tells us when we scale things how the parameters of our theory are change, and that's related to the beta function. So what is the beta function here? Well, to get that, we need to do dr db, and we also need du prime db. And so that means we actually need to do di1b with respect to b, and we need to do the derivative of i2 with respect to b. And even though these integrals are not necessarily so nice, it actually ends up being very easy to get these derivatives because they're the derivative of one of the limits of integration. And so you can actually use what's called the Leibniz rule in order to find these. And it says that if you're taking the derivative with respect to some variable that's in the limits of integration of some function that may or may not be dependent on that variable. And in our case, I1 and I2, the actual integrand is not dependent on B. So it makes it simpler for us. But I'll write out the whole rule. This is equal to f of x bt times the derivative with respect to x b of x minus f of x. That should be bx f of x evaluated with kx times the derivative with respect to x a of x plus the integral of a of x to b of x derivative with respect to x times this function. And the point is, this last part is going to be zero because our function has no actual dependence on B. And one of the limits doesn't have dependence on B either. It's only this lower limit that has a dependence on B. Okay, and so we can do this, and I'm not going to actually do the integral, but it would take a couple of lines on paper. When we do this, we get dr over db is equal to 2br plus u over 2kd over r plus the cutoff squared, b to the minus 2. And then du prime db is equal to 4 minus d b to the 3 minus d u minus 3u squared over 2 kd r plus gamma squared over b to the minus 2. Where kd is equal to s d minus 1 times the cutoff to the d to the minus 1 minus d over 2 pi to the d. So that's the solid angle again that just came from these integrals. Now, what are
Is it k sub d or k times d?
K sub d.
Oh, what?
Yes. Okay. Now, before we go any further, just looking at these equations, we could ask what are the fixed points. And there's more than one, it turns out. But there is one that even if you don't know what the integral of I2 or what I1 is, just by looking at this, you could say what one of the fixed points is.
The zeros?
Yes. If both r and u are zero, then you'll just get zero again. And then you put zeros in, you get zero back. Zero in, zero back. So we could say R star U star equals zero. Zero is one. And this is the Gaussian fixed point. I mean, if you remember from yesterday, that R was just related to the original reduced temperature for the Gaussian model. And so this fixed point ends up giving us a, you know, ends up being a stable fixed point that you get critical exponents for when you are at D of 4 or higher. And so this is kind of the trivial one that agrees with mean field theory. And so this is not the fixed point that we are going to need to look at if we're going to look at three dimensions. And we're going to talk about that fixed point tomorrow. But I mentioned it because it allows us to make contact with the beta function that Francois mentioned about the Gaussian fixed point. Because if we take, let's just take B equals, at least in his notes, I'm not sure if it was exactly like this in class, but he had a parameter that was S is equal to E to the B minus 1 for my B. And so this is 1 for no rescaling. And so if you take the equations that we got here, and then we write them in terms of S instead of B, you get S dr prime ds evaluated at B equals 1 is equal to 2 times R plus 1/2 KD gamma the minus 2 U minus 1/2 KD U times R times lambda, I'll keep calling it a gamma, lambda to the minus 4. And then this one, S DU prime over DS. And then also this is at D equals 4 that I'm looking at it in, because this is for the Gaussian fixed point. You're going to get 4 minus d times u, that's just going to go to 0, so there's no u there. And then we're just going to get minus 3u squared over 2 kd r plus cutoff squared. And so you can compare with at least in his notes, he has a potential that's T over 2 phi squared plus G over 4 factorial phi to the 4. And this gives S times the derivative of S with respect to T equals the negative beta function of T for the constants T and G is equal to 2T plus G minus tg, and then s dds for g is equal to minus beta g tg equals minus 3g squared. So these are Francois's notes. And so here we were just taking, you know, u is going to go to g, and r is going to go to t. And so here we have a 2r to go with the 2t, and then we have these things you just set to 1. Then we have u, which goes with the g, and then we have a u times r, which goes with the t times g. And then here we get a minus 3u squared. And I think, yeah, I think if we work it out, the 2 goes away. But the only thing I didn't mention is to get from here to there. The point is, since we're looking at d equals 4 and we're using the Gaussian fixed point, you expand around the Gaussian fixed point. So you have 1 over r plus the cutoff. And then you're going to put in 0 for r. So r is going to be very small. And so first of all, let's write this as this to this squared over 1 over r plus, let's see. So you can first rewrite this in that way, where this over gamma squared. And then this is approximately then 1 minus r over. So you do this, expansion. And so that's why you'll have a product of u times r, or in our case, t times g, or yeah, in his case, t times g. But yeah, basically when we find the RGTs, or the renormalization group transformations, we are finding the beta function. So that's what I wanted to really bring out to you. Yes?
Why is there a minus in front of the beta function?
What?
Why is there a minus sign?
I don't remember exactly. This is just what I copied from the notes at the time.
Because it seems that this would mean that the coupling like decreases as I increase, like, I don't know. Or is it because it's like in position space somehow, which is like...
Yeah, so I'm used to more thinking in terms of these things. So I need to think, maybe I'll answer more physically about this tomorrow. Yeah, let me think about how to interpret these correctly.